What up, what up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. John LaRocca is with me. We're going to go over a pretty explosive AEW Dynamite. We're also going to talk a little bit about Hit Row because we had a discussion on Twitter that we just decided to bring to the podcast. After John and I get done, I have an interview with a gentleman by the name of Phil Strum, who does a podcast called Under the Ring. Phil recently interviewed Dave, so that's kind of how I got in contact with him, and then I subscribed to his show. He's got some really good guests. He just interviewed Brian Gewirtz, and he's got Eddie Kingston coming up, so he gets to talk to some really cool people. But at his heart, he is a news guy. He's in journalism, so he and I kind of have that in common. So we talked wrestling media, talked some WWE under Triple H, And yeah, it's at the end. It's about a little bit over 30 minutes. So John and I will be here for about an hour, and then we'll throw it to the interview with Phil. If you like video, it is also on the F4W YouTube page, my interview with Phil. So it'll be up there whenever you listen to this. And yeah, let's get going, man. So we had talked, or actually you had tweeted. You were tweeting your SmackDown viewing. And you said something to the effect of that you think Hit Row will be fine with just the three individuals of Top Dolla, B-Fab, and Ashanti the Adonis. And I have a different opinion. Not that I wasn't happy to see them. I was actually really happy to see them. I was like, wow, you know, this is really cool that they were able to come back. But without Swerve, it is a little bit of a different act for me. It's kind of like, and I use this with somebody, I was like, you know, on their own, Destiny's Child without Beyonce, they're really good singer. They're really good, you know, they have really good voices. Kelly Rowland was a, Rowan was a somewhat, you know, she had a couple hits by herself, but Beyonce kind of made the act what it was. And so that's kind of what I felt about Hit Row. Was I thought it was very organic to Swerve and his personality, his style, all of those things. And also, he was the best wrestler out of the four. And so now you take him out of the picture. I think the act's still pretty cool, but I'm not sure it has everything to be a top act. So give me your feedback on what you saw on Friday night on SmackDown.
I mean, I would love for them to have Swerve still because I love that group altogether, but that's, you know, not a possibility. So when I saw them come out, the three of them, B-Fab, Top Dolla, and Ashanti the Adonis, I thought they looked good. I wasn't really missing Swerve that much. I like Swerve, but I still think he's probably going to be overshadowed anyways by Top Dolla. Not necessarily in the ring, but just personality, you know. That guy is just a big personality. He was a personality of that group, even with Swerve. Swerve was the flashier wrestler, the experienced wrestler. But I think as a tag team, you leave him there. Like, I wouldn't do anything like kind of make Top Dolla a singles guy or anytime soon. If I was WWE, I would just have them as tag team champions for a while. And because Top Dolla is very green, and he still needs a lot of seasoning before he even does singles matches. And Ashanti Adonis, he's really underrated. He's a really good athlete. You know, he's going to do a lot of the heavy lifting in those matches. And B-Fab, I think she's good in her role. Just don't let her wrestle, because what we saw of her in NXT 2.0, it wasn't good. But I think as the hype woman and interfering on the outside, are they babyfaces or heels? I did not get that. That's the only thing we haven't figured out yet, but that will come in time. And like I said, I like Swerve, but I just think Hit Row in general on the main roster, Top Dolla is going to be the personality that overshadows everyone in that group. And Swerve, that's what he would have been anyways. So, and like just on Dynamite tonight, like Swerve's promo with Lee and Private Party, and granted, it's one of those quick pre-tape, you know, promos that they're trying to set up a Rampage match. But like, he didn't really ooze any kind of like star quality to me out there. It was kind of a flat promo, and that kind of hit it home with me. Like, yeah, I think Hit Row's gonna be fine. I don't think they need to add anyone. I think the the three of them are fine together.
And yeah, I wouldn't add anyone because you add, you know, you add whoever you think that fits, and it's like, no, it doesn't fit because they are organic. They are a crew that was put a lot of thought was put into putting those four together.
Yeah.
So this may be a little bit unpopular, but I sort of wish Swerve was back in WWE right now. Not because, you know, I'm sure he's happy in AEW. He gets to do his indie stuff as well. But I would have loved to see them get a shot in main roster WWE with that full act together. And I think you're...
And with Triple H, like a guy who's behind the act.
Yeah, Triple H behind them. Yeah. I think you're underrating him a little bit because... And this is part of the reason why I wish he was in WWE. The thing with Keith Lee is sort of in cement a bit. Like they're the tag team champions, and they don't get treated like the tag team champions. No. They get treated by like, you know, maybe the third or fourth best team in the division. So, but he is a little
underutilized right now.
Underutilized is a good word,
and that's pretty sad as a tag team champion. But it's true though. It's true.
But the personality is not exuberant. Like he's a really cool guy. Like he's not over the top. Like Top Dollar. Top Dollar's over the top. Top Dollar's like, you know, he's loud. He looks like, you know, Suge Knight. Like he's just a big giant personality. And Swerve is cool, and so that's why they worked very well together. But I still think that Swerve has star power that Top Dollar may have, but he's also has to do it in the ring. And then there's the other thing, you know, like they're not only are they green inside the ring as a team, but also like, you know, trying to figure out how to fit in WWE. Like, you know, they're from what I understand, Top Dollar may not be the most popular guy, you know, because he speaks his mind, right? And he goes on Twitter and speaks his mind. He does interviews and he speaks his mind, which I like. I actually like that about him. But it may not make the most friends, you know, at his workplace. That's another thing that I think Swerve was very healthy for that team, because he's been around a little while. He probably understands that landscape a little better. So, I mean, I don't know if they're going to get to the top in WWE now without him. With him, I thought they would have had a shot, but unfortunately, it's just not going to work out for now. So,
I think they're going to get a big opportunity. I think they're going to be a featured tag team. I think they're going to be champions. I wouldn't be surprised if they're champions by at least the end of the year. Probably, maybe even sooner, depends what happens. Or maybe, I don't know what's going to do with the Usos and those belts, but I just think, like, right now, if you look at the WWE, like, currently in the tag team division, like, it's kind of stale, right? It's the same teams for the last few years now, and Hit Row would definitely inject some new life into that.
Viking Raiders are all of a sudden are kind of doing stuff again.
Yeah, I skipped that on SmackDown. I saw they attack Kofi Kingston. I just, like, man, I don't know. I don't care. I don't care for the Viking Raiders right now.
Yeah. It was... not that interesting to me either. Okay, so let's talk about Dynamite. Sure. I talk more WWE with Phil, so if you are into that, if you want to hear more WWE, just wait till John and I are done, and you'll get more from Phil and my interview. All right, so pretty explosive Dynamite. I'm very intrigued at the rating because it looked like the kind of show that generally does really good ratings for them. But as we know, the ratings have been very consistent, but they haven't been as impressive of late. They're still winning the evening, but they haven't been what they were this time last year. And so I'm really looking forward to that number because they started hot with Moxie and Punk. Mm-hmm. They had a great match with Danielson and Garcia, which was long, which, you know, can do good for ratings if people stick with the match. Then they came back with more Punk and Mox, and then they had the wink, wink, surprise, not a surprise in the main event with one of their biggest stars coming back. So confused. Like if they can't do a big number with this kind of show, then I don't know. I'm going to be scratching my head.
What's going to be a big number for you? because what they did 932 last week, I think it was, and before that was 975, right, or something like that, the week before. Like, what would be a big number? Like, oh, that was a big. Is it just over the million or at the million, or is it?
Let's pull up Paul Fontaine's.
That's where I go to for all my
AEW
always
Dynamite ratings, because what Paul does is every article that he writes in the ratings is he keeps a list of the last 10 or 15 shows or something like that, so we can actually see going back. So, you know, that you mentioned that 1 million number as just kind of being something that is a goal. That definitely is something. Obviously, what Tony is looking for more so is hitting that demo, which is the 18 to 49, and they've hit the 0.36 twice in the last 10 weeks. There was a June, July, last show of June, first show of July, where they did 0.36, and that was also the last time they did over a million, so 1.023 for June 29th. So
that was the War Games, right?
Is that what it was?
I think it was, yeah.
I would look there. Like, that would be where I think they should be for a show like this. You know, I should have looked before we did the show. I don't know what kind of competition was on tonight. I know there's always the challenge on CBS, and then there's Big Brother. But there may have been other stuff. I don't know what baseball game might have been on, or something else could have been on that I don't know about. But that being said, that's where I would look as far as... I would look to duplicate that June 29th number with a show like this.
I think with Punk coming back as a surprise last week, there has to be that interest there for this show, especially starting out with Punk too. I think was a smart move, and they would do that when Punk was there, you know, before his injury. He's always kind of the guy that kind of starts off the show, and that easy does really well. We'll see how they stay through the whole show. I think the Kenny Omega tease, I don't know. Well, I guess for the hardcores, it means something. I don't know about maybe the casual audience. I don't know, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I think it's going to be a good rating, though. I do. I think it's going to be... What was that War Games June 29th one again?
0.36 and 1.02. So 1,023,000.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, yeah. All right, I'll say it's probably going to be the same.
All right, so CM Punk starts the show, and he's like... dropping
fire.
Yeah, he's like calling people out. He's, you know, he's making fun of people.
He's like, stop me if I'm lying. I'm like, you know what, he's not lying.
I was like, man, this dude had some things that he had written down while he was watching from afar, and he just decided to bust out with all of them. He says, comes out and calls out Adam Page, who's not there. He's like, let's have our rematch right now. Sits in the middle of the ring. No Adam Page. And he says, the apology must be as loud as the disrespect. So what was Adam Page's disrespect? Because I didn't remember what it was.
Was it leading up to the match?
I don't know. I thought maybe there was something.
Nothing stood out.
Was there something on Twitter that I didn't know? Whatever it was. And so... The Adam Page reference, and we'll get to sort of what all of this means somewhere down about a little bit more than halfway through. This will all make sense. A lot of people think that this was a little bit of like, is this a clue as to something else that is going on? The Adam Page mention. So we'll circle back when the time is right to circle back. So he starts taking shots at Mox. He says Mox is the third best guy in his entire group. And he said that's sort of a reoccurring thing in his life. So it was a shot at Mox when he was Dean Ambrose in The Shield. Mm-hmm. He said that Mox's best friend is the third best Eddie he's ever been in the ring with. And the second best Kingston. And he says, you know, tell me when I'm telling lies. So as far as the Eddies, so... One of them's Eddie Guerrero.
Guerrero.
Who's the other Eddie?
Eddie Edwards?
No. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think.
Who
and then the other Kingston would have been Kofi Kingston?
Kofi Kingston, of course, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I don't know. We'll have to figure out who the other Eddie was. Someone will tell us, probably.
Paul Fontaine, he's on it.
Yeah, Paul Fontaine. ROH historian, Paul Fontaine.
I love that gimmick.
he also said... that it's not the first John he's beaten in Chicago for a belt. So that circles back to, what was that, 2013 WWE, when he was on fire for those few weeks.
Yep.
And he also said it's not that he's also not the best John. So then Mox's music comes out, and he knows it's going to be a little bit of a wait here. Mox has got to do his long entrance, so he starts making snow angels in the ring.
Yeah.
So Mox kind of looks at him, and he takes a little bit longer, and he says, everyone should watch out, because Punk is dropping pipe bombs. And he says, look, you know, it's just a microphone. You can't really do anything with the mic. Drop the mic, and let's fight, but you won't do shit. Punk said they have a match, and he's worried that if he hits Mox, that Mox will bleed all over him. And so they both go toe-to-toe and nose-to-nose, no one giving an inch, and then security comes in and breaks them up. And this isn't one of those, like, pull-aparts. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Attitude Era WWE, where they would use something that happened in the beginning of the show, and then you kind of forget about it a little bit, but then they remind you that it's sort of still happening and it's still continuous. And so they did that. To Tony, I think he believes that, you know, this is really what the fans are into. So he put them back on TV again, which sometimes can work against you, right? Like you fans have already seen you come out, and they're essentially doing the same thing, because they basically do the same thing halfway through the show. And it's risky, because sometimes the fans will go, oh, we just saw this, why do we need to watch it again? But I think he believes that this is really something juicy for fans. And, you know, they did not just pull apart and go to commercial. They hung with this thing. And Mox was trying to find a way to get to him. And Punk was, you know, waiting in the ring, but he was looking around the corner. He knew Mox was circling him. And, you know, then they went at each other again, but they got quickly pulled away. And Claudio was in there at one point. And actually, I think that might have been in the second time where he just like picks up Moxley in his arms, bear hugs him. He's like, no, you come over here. But it was like they wanted us to believe that, you know, this was more than just, you know, set up for the main event of the next pay-per-view, control, all, you know, copy paste, you know, kind of thing. It was like, oh, no, we're hanging with this thing. And, you know, we want this to feel a little bit more real than some of these pull aparts usually feel. So what did you think about the opening segment?
I liked the promo with Punk. I thought he was great. So happy he's back. But once they started fighting, I didn't like, I thought it didn't look that good. And the pull apart, well, the part I didn't like actually is before that. It was actually, they're out there together, just them two. And, like, I think they should have had, like, as Mox is making his way to the ring, there should have been slowly, you see security kind of come around, the officials are coming around, the management team's coming around, and kind of like, and then Punk's like, oh, don't worry, you know, they could have done something like that, like they kind of, it just looked like it was set up because no one's out there, right? Like it just didn't really feel real, because if you had these two guys that are going to fight, or it's going to be an explosive situation, you know, you want to calm down, right? You want to be there, someone to stop it if it goes too crazy. And the security does come out, but again, it's just these extra security guys. And I would like to see like more officials, like Ace Steel, BJ Whitmer. They came out the second time around. More of those kind of people out there. Maybe some of the boys would have been better as well to kind of break things out. Like, you know, we had to get some extra help to separate these guys. But I thought the fighting, like actually the punches, weren't looking good. But the crowd was going crazy. I just thought it was, other than the promos, I didn't like the pull apart part.
There was some slapping, slap boxing going on.
It's just like when they did when they first connect, and it's like they're almost doing like a really bad looking hockey fight. And, you know, that I think they could have laid this out just a little bit better, but second time around too, I thought the same thing, but we'll see. I mean, people were going crazy, that they were loving it in the building.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out if they were protecting Punk a little bit more than they would have just because he was just recently coming back from injury. But the announcers didn't really lean that way. So maybe I thought, oh, I might be overthinking this, because that would have made sense in that, you know, we cannot have this dude fight. Like, he literally just came back from a broken foot. We need to have this main event. And so let's protect him a little. But that was not the story that they were telling.
Yeah, yeah. I think I just wanted a little more believability with the, some of the stuff that they were doing. But I thought, I thought Punk was tremendous, you know, and a lot of stuff he said was made sense. And Mox didn't. I mean, I know he's a good promo, but, you know, obviously he was like, "I'm gonna be the, I'm the fighter. Let's fight. Stop talking." That was his part of the deal.
So there's an interview with Will Hobbs, Powerhouse Hobbs, and he was talking about Tony Schiavone. Just basically asked him, "What, you know, why did you?" You and Ricky were best friends. Why did you turn your back on him? And he's like, you know, he's like, this guy, he said he was okay with losing. You know, he said he was cool with it. And I don't want to lose. I'm there to make sure that he doesn't lose. And he still loses. Like, what's going on? And so then he says he also has something for QT and the factory. Now, I thought this was going to lead to maybe Ricky gets a little bit of a comeback, or we'd see something happen, but this was it. That was the only thing about this.
And yeah, we didn't see Ricky. Don't see Ricky on the show at all. Maybe he'll be on Rampage, but they mentioned he'll be on Rampage. That Powerhouse delivery was good. He's still very inexperienced at it. He's just going to get better. They just need to give him more opportunities to talk. I didn't like the excuse why he turned on it. I thought that was kind of just almost felt like didn't have a really good reason for it, other than, you know, all of a sudden that one thing made him pissed off. I don't know. It just, you know, it could have been something deeper. He could have talked about what, you know, maybe he felt like Starks was always putting himself forward, not him. And you know what I mean? He's always saving his ass. And I don't know. I just, it was fine, but happy that Hobbs is getting talk. And I don't like this idea of them messing around with the factory, though. I don't want to see him just, it's not going to gain him anything.
Well, you know what it tells me is that they don't want to do anything yet, and thus he just needs something to do. Like, this is what they always do, right? When they want to lengthen these stories out.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When he laid out Starks should have been out of it for a while, you know? Something big on his neck, maybe a power driver or something, and the whole stretcher job deal, and Starks is out for a while, and now Hobbs, he's just smashing people until you're ready to have Starks return. It doesn't have to be at All Out. Like, Hobbs can beat someone on the pre-show, you know. It doesn't have to be on the main show, or it'd be nice if you got the pay-per-view match, but you can kind of come back, because there's only 3 weeks till the pay-per-view. You might as well just start something fresh with Starks coming back, you know, and have a nice program for the fall between those two guys.
So Ricky the Dragon Steamboat is he timekeeper?
I guess.
I mean, he was looking at...
Oh, yeah, like, he was
looking at a stopwatch. He was looking
timekeeper. You're right.
Stopwatch that Big Dave uses when he's timing matches and he's watching wrestling. Mm-hmm. So Jericho comes out for the match, and we get Danielson and Garcia right away. And it's 2 out of 3 fall match. Garcia wins the first fall after a pile driver and a dragon sleeper. Danielson doesn't tap, but he does go out. Mm-hmm. So that's the first fall. Second fall almost happens immediately because the referee like starts counting so fast. Like, Danielson hasn't even woken up yet. He's getting counted on the ground. And I think JR even mentioned, he's like, yeah, they're counting too early, and Jericho's there doing the commentary. And so, you know, Jericho, if he picked his spots a little bit better, he wouldn't have been so annoying. I think the problem is that we're watching a match and something happens and then Jericho says it doesn't, or something doesn't happen then Jericho says it does. And so he's just like we can see it. It's not like this is radio, you know, where maybe he could lie to us, but we could see it. And I was like, man, what I wouldn't have paid for Excalibur to say, okay, Trump, or something like that, because just this dude is his heel announcing is just nothing but misinformation. Yeah.
He's a Trump supporter.
Yeah. That was what stopped me from listening to his podcast, by the way. When he brought Don Jr. on, I was like, okay, I'm out. I don't need to hear this in my wrestling podcast. So they go to picture in picture, and somehow on the outside, Danielson gets bloodied up. And so I was thinking like, oh,
ET
no.
on the floor.
Oh, is that what he was?
Yeah.
I was like, oh no, here we go again with the blood.
Okay, I'm not the only one.
So, okay, but thankfully, Danielson has long hair, and so it covered up the blood almost to the point that you didn't that by the time the match was over, you could barely see it. And so it wasn't too, like, it didn't bother me too much. And then this was the only blood on the show. So at first I was like, oh God, here we go. But then you could barely see it because his hair is so long and covered his eyes.
And he hasn't really cut himself too many times before. So I don't think he's experienced that. Doing those and didn't look like a good one. He didn't draw much blood, but then Dan Garcia got bloody later.
Oh, did he also get bloody?
Yeah, double juice. And that's when I was like, oh,
maybe I thought it was Jericho.
That was my issue.
Danielson's.
I liked the match, though. I wouldn't have done the DT on the floor. That's like exposing the concrete and DTing them. Like, and it's just, it meant nothing other than to get Bryanson, bleeding there.
Well, he almost got counted out, right?
No, I thought he rolled him back in, and then Brian started making a little bit of a comeback like soon after. So it didn't really mean much. I don't know. They did it right in front of Rick Steamboat, who and Jake Roberts DT'd on the floor. He was out for a while and his big comeback. But Danielson made his comeback all in one few minutes there.
So for the second fall, Garcia goes to the Dragon Sleeper again, but Danielson counters it. Mm-hmm. Into a pin attempt, and he gets the three. So Garcia's kind of like, he's thinking like, wow, I have my way with this guy, but then he gets countered. And so now it is 1-1. Danielson hits his best tope in a long time. He does it kind of almost into the corner. And so look kind of had a cool angle, and he actually hits the guy. It wasn't the craziest tope of the night, by the way, though. And so it was really, it looked great. The camera angle was perfect. So you saw him diving right at you. Great third fall, brutal, physical. I saw JR Kratos's tweet. I was like, yeah, that guy would know about brutal and physical. Stomps, slaps. Danielson uses headbutts to the chest. And poetically, Danielson wins with the LaBelle lock. Gene LaBelle Judo Gene recently passed away. And I thought it was nice that he wins with the LaBelle lock.
Yeah.
And I have a problem with TV matches because of the commercials and because of the picture in picture. It's like kind of hard. You lose. It's almost like you're watching a suspenseful movie and like your heart is racing. And then it's like 3 minutes of commercials, and so then you kind of get out of it, and then you gotta like pop back into it when the commercial's over. I sort of feel the same way about televised wrestling, so I don't know if it's where it would rank on my favorite matches, but it's one of my favorite matches in quite a long time. I really liked it. The physicality, Garcia is right there with Danielson move for move, and like I said, the physicality in that third fall was awesome.
Yeah, no, I really liked the match. I thought it was really good. So glad to see Danielson back in the ring. I mean, he's probably been in many of my favorite AEW matches since his debut in AEW, especially that hour Broadway with Hangman Adam Page. I love that match. Still my favorite match in AEW. And yeah, this was really good. I could have done out without the blood, just because we saw blood twice last week, and it's just one week. We just didn't need it. We didn't need it all. And I don't think this match really needed it. So, but yeah, I really liked it. That was definitely the best match on the show for sure.
So Jericho comes out and he attacks Danielson. Garcia stops him and Jericho's perplexed. Almost like, how dare you? Like, I'm the mentor here. And Garcia slaps Jericho's hand away, and Jericho leaves, and he's in the ring, and Danielson's kind of coming to, and the crowd starts chanting at him that he's a wrestler and not a sports entertainer. So now he's at a little bit of a crossroads. And I wanted to see a little bit of like, oh, like he's, there's a little bit of like a pull between these two groups. I wonder how long they're going to go with it. Nope. Next week, Jericho's like, I demand you in the ring. and maybe they won't like sort of figure out the whole storyline there. But there's now it's, you know, Danielson or Jericho is going to be his mentor or whatever. And I'm sure that's going to lead to Jericho and Danielson at the pay-per-view, though.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, I wouldn't mind seeing these guys run it back for the rubber match, you know, at the pay-per-view as well.
Yeah, that'd be good too. But yeah, I think it's going to be Jericho and Danielson for sure at the pay-per-view. I thought, no, it's funny. I just kind of laugh when Jericho's like, Carson, we're going to have a talk and I'll see you next week on Dynamite. Like, talk anytime between then. You know? Like, so I thought that was funny because it seems like they do that a lot.
Can't he just say, I know you're emotional.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a week.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week and then we'll chat next week. He could have said something like that because I thought exactly the same thing.
That sounds very logical. Sounds like you need to cool off.
Yeah. I know you're emotional. You had a great match. You did such a great job. You know, the fans, you're maybe overwhelmed a little bit by the fans' cheers. Who cares about the fans' cheers? But let's take a week.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
All right. The interview that we had talked about, Swerve in Our Glory and Private Party. I don't even, like, something happened last week that I may not have seen because they
might have been on Rampage. I didn't watch Rampage.
I watched most of Rampage. Because Rampage was terrible. It was
I
know,
I was
going to
watch it. I was going to watch it. Like, oh, man, is this that bad? Garrett's like, damn, it's bad. I got to watch it. And I was like, I watched SmackDown.
SmackDown was the better show.
Well, yeah, I was like, you know, Walter Shinsuke, I heard was good. You know, I'm like,
that's the best Nakamura match. I don't know. I've seen in a really, really long time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Nakamura's going to show up when it's when he's in the main event position on a show, right? And then gets a guy like Walter or Sir Gunther. But, you know, that was great. And I just never went back to watching Rampage.
You know what I thought when I watched that match? I was like, son of a bitch, John drafted him in our draft. And if I would have known Vince McMahon was out of power and that I get the Triple H version of Walter, I would have had him higher on my list.
I know we're talking about WWE here, but real quick, the mention of John Cena has never won the Intercontinental title, and also Walter would love to wrestle, or because he wants competition the best, he would love to wrestle John Cena. Sounds like a tease for maybe WrestleMania.
That'd be cool.
And I hope Walter wins that match. I think he should because John Cena doesn't need to win. You know.
Yeah, no, I think that'd be cool. So basically, Swerve is like ripping on both of them for being there for so long, and they're barely number five ranked. And I guess we're gonna get some sort of match on Rampage.
What happened to Mark Quinn? Like, they just made him just plain old guy.
I don't know.
Like, no wild hair. Doesn't understand. They don't. You know.
I haven't seen him in a match in quite a long time. Does he still do the bird call thing?
I don't know. Last time he was on, like, about 4 weeks ago, I think they did something on television, on Dynamite, I think it was, or whatever. But yeah, that kind of like, all of a sudden, like, we haven't even seen these guys really another ranked number five. When did this happen? Of course, they probably won a couple matches on YouTube.
Yeah. Tony Nese and Smart Mark walking down the ramp. Moxley attacks Nese. He didn't really hit him that hard. Like, he just kind of clubbed him in the back. Maybe it's because Nese didn't see it looking. Like, you know, they always say in boxing, like, if you see a punch coming, you can kind of prepare yourself. But the knockouts happen on the ones that you don't really prepare for. So maybe Nese couldn't see it, didn't prepare for it. Because, man, all it took was one thing from Mox, and Nese was done. Didn't see this dude ever again.
I hope we're not going to get Nese versus Moxley where Smart Mark Sterling is going to sue for the attack or something like that.
Yeah. Well, we only got two more Dynamites, right? So
yeah, he might. Yeah. Well, there's a couple Rampages. Who was Nese supposed to wrestle?
I didn't see anybody. Did you?
No, because I went through the JS promo after.
Yeah. So Mox calls out Punk again. He's like, "Let's unify the belts right now. I want you to let's have this match right now." Punk runs out, gets stopped by security. This is where Claudio grabs Moxley. And yeah, so that was that. And we thought that was it. with this for the night, but no, there was more.
You know what they should have done? Like after the break, the opening segment, after they had the brawl, they should have come back to backstage where they're still trying to separate these guys.
Yeah.
It's big commotion right there, right at gorilla position. You know, just caught, you know, during the commercial break. And then you actually see Tony Khan in the middle, like, calm down, guys, calm down. You know, like, and then like kind of cut to, which would have been the, well, see, then coming out to a damn Hobbs promo. I wouldn't put the Hobbs promo there. I would have, that's when you have Daniel Garcia come out or Jericho come out for commentary. Actually, you know what? They wasted time. No, they could have saved some time. Here's a clue. Here's something for Tony Khan to think about. When you have Chris Jericho come out, have Daniel Garcia come out at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need for Jericho to come out with this whole song. He's soaking it up, right? His song. And then Danielson comes out, and then we have Garcia's full entrance. Like, you could easily kill two birds with one stone with that. I forgot to bring that up. I wanted to bring it up now. So,
yeah. They could have shaved a couple minutes off that Jungle Boy promo too, and I wouldn't have been unhappy.
I'm available for shave time on shows. I definitely could see.
So this is where Tony is with Jericho in 2.0, and Jericho says he's going to give Garcia a pass. It was possible he was fuzzy from the match, but next week he wants confrontation to see what side he's on. Ricky Steamboat is in the back and tells Jericho that Danielson is the better choice to mentor Garcia, and Jericho says that he's always hated Steamboat. And then Angelo Parker, like, starts talking trash, and Steamboat's, like, not paying attention. He grabs him by the throat, and then Steamboat slaps Angelo Parker in the chest, and then they go to commercial.
Can we do something in the ring with Steamboat?
I don't know. Maybe.
Like, what after that match with Danielson and Garcia, Steamboat's, like, overwhelmed by the match he saw was such a great match. He wanted to go in there as well to not only shake Danielson's hand for winning, but also shake Garcia's hand for, you know, showing all his guts and, you know, fighting hard and nearly winning. And then he can kind of be like when Jericho comes out and maybe have Parker and Mac Menard coming out as well. And they're out there during this. You do the whole thing with Garcia and Jericho. And then as Garcia kind of slowly leaves with the JAS, or, you know, maybe he's leaving like a tad bit, or maybe he just leaves first. Maybe Garcia's like, I'm done, like walks out, right? Maybe he's so mad. And then JAS is in there, and then Parker goes up to Steamboat. Steamboat's like kind of with dancing, he's still on the ground, and he's kind of like, Steamboat's kind of checking on him. And Parker kind of give him like a little, you know, something, and then Steamboat can fire up the chop. I don't know, like something in front of that crowd to get the pop.
I mean, maybe they did something in front of the live crowd that we didn't see.
Maybe for Rampage. I don't know. I thought that was kind of a waste opportunity.
I was kind of mad because the way that the camera was positioned, Steamboat threw like an overhand right hand chop. Yeah. I wanted to see the old reverse knife edge, as Gorilla would have called it, with the backhanded chop. But no, we saw the overhand.
I wanted to see the reverse knife edge. I wanted to see the whole pose, you know, the whole karate, you know, Bruce Leroy from Last Dragon pose.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to see.
No, that's the dragon that we remember.
Yep, damn sure right.
All right. In a segment that I was kind of wondering about the standing of two gentlemen in this company, the Varsity Blondes against the Ass Boys, the Gun Club. This match was, 30 seconds? And poor Griff got pinned by the Colt 45? And then I know that all I saw was Griff posted on Twitter, frustrated.
Tell me they're breaking up.
These guys might be better off elsewhere, I'm starting to think.
Yeah, I think. I mean, they're not going to do anything there unless Tony Khan decides to put them in maybe ROH whenever that starts going. But still, I mean, yeah, they're probably best to move on. I think it's been 3 years now with them, and they're young. They can come back. Things, you know, get more experience and stuff. No big deal. I just thought, like, the finisher. It was just like, was that Colton Gunn hit his finisher, right? Mm-hmm. Nice to see like a double team move. Establish a finisher, double team finisher, you know?
Yeah, it was so quick. And it was so quick. I think JR said something about what happened or what's the matter or what's going on or something like that.
Yeah. I thought the Heat could have been, like, they could have been a little more aggressive. I mean, they did all right, though. I like the Gunn guys.
So then Billy Gunn comes in, he hugs him, and he's like, yes, that's exactly what I want to see. And the timing of this hug and Billy Gunn looking towards the stage kind of ruined it for everybody.
And also saying Stokey Hathaway is going to come out.
Is that what he said? I didn't hear that.
Yeah. Tells the guy Stokey Hathaway is going to come out.
Oh, man. He killed it for me because I was like, okay, who's coming out? Who's coming out?
Yep. And, he's like, yeah.
So then Stokely comes out and he's got a smile. And Billy Gunn is looking at him mad, and the boys attack their pops, and they leave him laying, and then the Acclaimed come in, and they save Papa Billy Gunn. Now, JR, I don't know if JR knows the comedy is coming, because JR is selling this as if it is the worst thing that has ever happened. He called the Gun Club pathetic. He started to say, I think what he was trying to say is, you never do that to your dad. And for those of us who don't have our dads anymore, you know, and he started to go that route. And then they started scissoring. And I think he just was like, oh, God, what am I doing here?
He's trying to sell it like a big deal because it should be, right? When two young sons turn on their father. I was like, well, you know, I wonder how this Russo writing tryout's turning out. He gets like a segment a week, it seems like. And here it is again. Why break the gun? Why take Billy Gunn away from the Gun Club?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just stupid. I'd rather have them. I think there's something to the guns. These young heels, and they're good. They're good kids. And then you got their dad, who's this big heater on the outside. Yeah,
Billy only makes sense with them. He doesn't make sense with the Acclaimed. I kind of wonder if he's moving out of a TV role by doing this, because I don't see him. Like, who needs a babyface manager that is bigger than everybody on Earth?
And Stokey, they're just giving too many people at this point. Like, how many people does this guy have? Ethan Page, Jade, Kira Hogan. So, what's that girl's Gray?
Layla Gray.
Layla Gray. I mean, he's getting a lot of guys over here. At least they got rid of all the managers. They only got one manager, so now they're just loading him up, I guess, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Tully's like, hey, man. You couldn't even give me one person that was on TV.
What the hell's Brian Cage doing?
Who knows?
Supplements, I guess. He's just hanging out, working out, waiting for the call.
So next is a video that sets up the trios, a possible trios match down the line with Wardlow and FTR against Lethal, Dutt, and Singh.
It sounds like All Out, huh?
Yeah, I guess. But before... So basically what happens is this is the heel side doing a promo, Lethal, Singh, Dutt. And the end of this video is Satnam Singh asking Wardlow if he's even strong enough to powerbomb him. And so we'll just talk about this segment now. It doesn't happen immediately after, but it happens a couple segments later. Cash says no one beats the Pinnacle. And they're setting up what seems to be a trios match, but then Dax wants Jay Lethal one-on-one next week. So that's the match that we get next week is Jay Lethal and Dax.
Going to be really good. But Wardlow in a six-man tag at the pay-per-view? Man, he's... I don't know.
I mean, he's with FTR, so there's something there, but...
True.
And there's the Pinnacle, but yeah, again, it's one of those things where I'm just like, oh, what's the long-term plan here? Because the way that we're getting there is kind of weird.
Yeah, I just think Wardlow was so hot, and he's just kind of there. Tony Khan has a hard time with follow-up. We saw that with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus attacking him.
Well, I mean,
you see that now with Keith Lee.
Didn't Punk kind of say it about Adam Page? That was his opening promo, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, he kind of pointed that out.
Yeah, Page. Well, I think that was just too late when they did pull the trigger and all that stuff. But I don't know. For at least a lot of follow-up and then lack of follow-up and... Sure enough, with Wardlow too, he just doesn't feel as hot as he did with it versus going up against MJF. So
Pac does an interview setting up the trios match between his team and Ospreay and Aussie Open, and he's kind of trying to bag on Ospreay. And the only thing I could think of was, I was like, Ospreay's not really paying attention to you, dude. He's got a match with Okada tonight. Like, that's what he's worrying about. It's the G1 finals, and he doesn't care about this tag match until next week. But yeah, Okada and Ospreay, and I don't know, probably very soon from when we're recording. I'm gonna try and not get spoiled and wake up tomorrow morning and throw that match on immediately. All right, so Jungle Boy comes out. He wants Christian at All Out. He admits that every single possible time he sees Christian, he wants to get his hands on him. He even tried to hit him with a car. He says that he wore a shirt that he's not allowed to wear anymore. And Christian comes out, and he's just like, you know, well, we got to put a stop to this. It's getting out of hand. And he walks into the ring, and I was like, Jungle Boy, you just told us the second you get a chance to get your hands on this dude, you're going to attack him. I wish Christian would have stayed on the outside. But he lets Christian go on his spiel a little bit. He, you know, believe it or not, I'm proud of you. He's talking to him about getting the team back together. He could take Jungle Boy to bigger and better places. And then Jungle Boy finally teases the hug, and right when they about to do the hug, then he spears him, stomps on Christian's arm on the steps. Christian does get like a back kick so he gets something on Jungle Boy, but I don't know. This was really, really long, and I was just kind of wondering the whole time, where is this thing going?
Yeah, and Jungle Boy's promo was not good. And like the whole first part of the promo was talking about how he's been doing everything to get his hands on him. And once Christian steps in the ring with him, he doesn't do anything.
Yeah. I guess the idea was that he outsmarted the smart guy, but still, like, it wasn't something that was like, they didn't hit us over the head with that.
Yeah. So I wasn't really into this. This is kind of like, where's this going? Obviously a singles match. It might be a gimmick match, might be a lumberjack match or something. I'm sure. Well, because, you know, Christian's running away.
Yeah, he's gonna run away.
It could be a cage match. Could be a cage match, which I hope not, because that'd be the first match. So
yeah. Then we got Kylan King against Tony Storm. Thunder Rosa was watching on the screen in the back. Kylan King's really tall. I didn't realize how tall she was, and it made kind of like the very interesting look of this match. So I think it was, I think Excalibur said that Tony Storm's hip attack is called Sweet Cheeks Music.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Wow. That one surprised me. I was like, I thought it was just the hip attack. Nope, it's got its own move, or its own name. So Tony finally beats her with a swinging DDT followed by a pendulum DDT. I kind of like Kylan King. I think you had mentioned that she'd worked like years ago in AEW. Maybe she's worked since.
She was a lot during the pandemic era shows, like the empty arena shows, not on Dynamite, but a lot of those dark shows, a lot of being the talent in the crowd, you know, the extras, you know, cheering on the wrestlers. So, but she's good. She's a solid. I think this match was for their women's division was a decent match. Some stuff, like when Kylan King used her power, height, and strength and length. Like, I like that. But when, like, early on when she's trying to, like, you know, they're doing Mahi Star cradle reversals and all that, that didn't look good. But once she would use her, like, you know, her power against Tony Storm, who's much smaller than her. That was good, you know, but it was okay. Better than most. And then, of course, at the end, we see Thunder Rosa clapping for Thunder's Tony Storm, but giving like a really bad acting of a, you know. Like, why? All of a sudden, she doesn't want to wrestle her? Like, is Thunder Rosa going heel now?
I don't know.
It's just stupid.
I don't know where any of this is going.
But we know Tony Storm is a fan of the Fight Game Media podcast because she dropped that pile driver.
Yeah, you're right.
A little short pile driver. I've been saying it ever since, every time she would win it. It doesn't look good. And I like that little pendulum jump up straight down DDT. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it looked good. So another kind of waste of a segment. I know they need to set up this match for Rampage. The Best Friends are mad at the Trustbusters because
I forgot about this.
Daivari just buys their friendship and they're not truly best friends like the Best Friends are. And then they did some comedy gimmick where they weren't on the same page with their little cheer or whatever at the end.
Yeah.
So on Friday, we get Trustbusters and Best Friends in the Trios tournament. We get Penelope and Athena. We get Claudio speaking, I guess. We get Hook versus Zach Clayton, the reality. Do you know anything about this guy?
Yeah, he's dating or engaged to Jay Wow on the Jersey Shore. And he's, that's where I know him from. Because my wife watches Jersey Shore and she even mentions like, oh, you wrestled a match on that Run Wrestling Company that you watch. And I actually saw that episode and I was like, oh yeah, it's just on Dark. No one watches anyways. And then, so I think I'm going to have her watch that match. I think she'll get a kick out of it. So I think we might tune in for that match on Rampage.
So my cousin, technically my cousin's husband, he reached out to me. This was like a couple months ago. And he was like, hey, do you know Zach so-and-so, has he wrestled? And so I just quickly did a Google search of his name because I wasn't exactly sure who he was talking about, but he said that he was on the Jersey Shore family reunion.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've watched like the first season when the Jersey Shore family reunion came back, but I haven't watched it since. And so I wasn't keeping up with any storylines or anything. And so then he's like, yeah, you know, if you let me know if he ever does anything, because I kind of want to watch it. And he's really not really a wrestling fan. Like, he knows some of the old stuff, but he does all of our graphics. So any graphic for like the Fight Game podcast, Fight Game Media, and all my other podcasts, the sports podcast, he's done all my graphics for me. So, but it was funny because he's just reaching out to me, asking me about the short guy. Yeah. Is he going to wrestle? I was like, oh, you know, he maybe he does have a little bit of notoriety to Hook, you know, for this match with Hook.
Did he come out on Rampage?
He came out on Rampage, yes.
Well, I mean, from the highlight, it showed like he had a decent promo.
Yeah, he said he wanted to make sure that that when he wrestled Hook, it was in Jersey. So that's why he didn't wrestle him last week.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll get... is that going to be on Dynamite next week?
No, Rampage. This week? Yeah.
But they're not.
So where were they tonight? They were in
Virginia.
That's right. Huh. Weird.
Yeah, so I was saying, well, I guess they're gonna have some shots of Jay Wow on the front row, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty cool. I mean, I don't know what Jay Wow means in 2022, but it's funny because you know, we run a wrestling Facebook page and I saw so much shade at the Jersey Shore and I had to stop myself from telling all of our favorite people, how can you shit on the Jersey Shore when we watch wrestling?
Oh yeah, Jersey Shore is harmless. Like, it's funny. I get a kick out of it. I mean, I don't watch every episode, but every once in a while my wife would watch it actually in the family area and I'll tune in, you know.
DJ Pauly D.
Oh yeah, they're hilarious.
The situation; those guys are always going to be over with me. They are reality royalty in my eyes.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, and then Swerve and Our Glory versus Private Party, and then they made it official for All Out: Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm. So that means no Britt Baker because she's not going to be in the match against Jade. I'm assuming that's going to be Athena.
Yeah.
So I wonder what Britt does on this pay per view.
Comes out. Talks. Yeah. It's a 4-hour, 5-hour pay-per-view, right? So
yeah, attacks one of the winners or something. I don't know.
Challenges Jade, you know, Jade celebrates her latest victory.
Yeah. And then on Dynamite, Death Triangle versus Ospreay and the Aussie Open, Dax versus Jay Lethal. And then just impromptu, guess what, guys?
Hey.
Jon Moxley and CM Punk for the title.
Okay. I know we're gonna circle back to a lot of things.
Yeah.
But we got to circle back to JR talking about, oh, yeah, it's going to be on pay-per-view. It's money. That's where the money's at. I got the Iggy about it being on Dynamite, and I was like, wait, what are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's like, it's next week. I'm like, you've ribbon? He's like, no. My buddy of mine was talking to you. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. And it sure shit it was. And so I'm wondering, when I heard that Jim Ross say that line, I wonder if he's airing out some frustration.
Or just doesn't know. Like, there's a lot of stuff that he I don't think he knows.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Okay, so let's talk about this, because there were some hints thrown around in the beginning that people thought, oh, maybe they're going to do this match and then Punk's going to face Hangman.
Mm-hmm.
That is out there. It is also out there, at least this is, you know, fans' fantasy booking. Oh, Mox is going to have this match with Punk. Punk's going to win. MJF is the all-out main event. I am led to believe that this is just an angle.
Not a match.
Well, it may very well be a match, but an angle leading to the pay-per-view. Now, I don't know if that means stipulation match for the pay-per-view, but I sort of feel like this isn't... they very well may have the match. I'm sure they're going to have the match because they advertised it, but that it's going to lead to something, not that this replaces the pay-per-view match and then they go in a different direction.
I thought the same thing. I was like, they're probably going to do a gimmick match at the pay-per-view, but why? You don't need a gimmick for this match. The gimmick is title for title, right?
Yeah.
You want the first meeting to be at the pay-per-view, right? That is a money match. You don't put that match for free, you know?
Okay,
and
so
it better be a rematch, because what? Fuck.
So let's circle back to the very beginning of our discussion on Dynamite about the ratings. Now, if we think back to last year, this time, I wish I had a handy thing. I'm sure Paul Fontaine has it somewhere that I can quickly look, but if I find it, I'll find it. But essentially, they were hotter than blazes last year this time, with Punk coming back, with Danielson coming in, with Cole coming in. They just felt crazy hot, right?
Yeah.
And the ratings probably showed. Let's see if I can find... I don't know if Paul has the AEW ones in here, but he basically shared a spreadsheet of ratings going back to 2011. But I don't think he's got AEW stuff on here. I think it's just WWE. Anyways, maybe the idea is, like, we need to ramp up these ratings heading into this September season. This is a big pay-per-view for us, and we got to get back to where we were. I don't know if that's the case or not, but
yeah,
like, why else would you, what feels like hot-shotting this main event for next week?
It is hot-shotting for sure. I guess I don't understand. I guess Tony Khan feels he has something better for the pay-per-view, either between a rematch between these two guys or someone else versus the winner of the match. I can only think CM Punk, you won the main event in Chicago.
Yeah.
Right? I still think, fuck, man, I don't know. We'll see. I can't even guess, because it just blows my mind. I would never do this. I would want it for the pay-per-view.
I mean, because then, obviously, you can't have a winner in this match if you're going to lead to a new match. And they rarely do non-finishes.
Yeah, non-finish... I think we'll get some back. Unless MJF comes in costume and it's a three-way.
Yeah, I heard that. Someone said Paige in a three-way, and I didn't think Paige in a three-way accentuated this match in any way.
No, we just see Paige with butterflies on his pants and, you know, having teen dramas with the Young Bucks in the back.
Yeah.
You know, like, what?
Adding MJF to the match to make it a three-way, I think, would make it feel big, but different in a different way. Because there's so much blood heat between these two guys. I don't know if adding MJF makes it any better.
I mean, unless MJF came out and there's some chaos in the main event at the pay-per-view and cost CM Punk the title, you know, with Moxley not, you know, knowingly reaping the benefits. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So I don't know. This is really weird, but we'll see. We'll see what the Book of the Year has up his sleeve, I guess. You know, we'll see. This is it.
All right. Main event. Andrade, Roosh, Dragon Lee against the Young Bucks and the returning Kenny Omega in the first round of the Trios tournament. Now, I am of the side of folks who thought Omega was a little too cute in this match with so people know, the story of this match is that Omega's still hurt. He's wearing a shirt, a compression shirt. He's got something protecting his shoulder, and he's wrestling the match as someone who is rusty. There was a couple times where he didn't do his move correctly. From a strength perspective, he can't put people in the moves that he's used to putting in the moves. And from what I gather, at least I think this is the storyline. Now, I'm not watching all of the shoulder programming, so I don't, you know, people who are, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I sensed was the Young Bucks couldn't get a partner. Omega was their last guy. He agreed, but he is not 100%. That's kind of what I gauged from all of the stuff that's been happening. So Omega, who probably is really hurting, like he may never, you know, just with all those injuries that he had, I can't imagine he's 100% in any way. Mm. But he works through it, and he's, you know, a tough guy and a pretty strong guy, so he's able to do a lot of these things in his matches. So he is a hurt guy now pretending to be hurt in the ring. And I don't know. I won't say I wasn't a fan of it. I thought it was cute. I thought it was a little too cute. And he's not... He could have done it... So, and here's the problem. What is our comparison to this almost exact same storyline? It's a Bryan Danielson. Danielson got, you know, he came back from the concussion, he loses the match to Daniel Garcia, gets knocked out in the match, and he's doing what looks to be like real selling in this match against Garcia, right? So now we see Omega doing the over exaggerated selling. I just thought it was too cute, looked too fake to me.
Yeah I think the issue with this was, this is a month, I think, for such a star that he is, it kind of felt underwhelming. Like, the look, I don't like the story of him being broken down and making a comeback. I'd rather see him come back when he's really healthy and be in the mix for something bigger than a six-man tag team title, you know? I didn't come out with the shirt and the compression shirt and the shoulder. I don't know, man. I wasn't feeling it. I felt like it should have been a bigger deal. For me, it didn't feel like that big of a deal.
Okay, I could be wrong. I am sensing a pretty gigantic babyface turn coming out. Like, he was, I don't know if he was a heel.
He's a babyface here, though he came out with a heel manager.
He came out with his heel stuff. He was on the babyface team.
Yeah.
But I'm sensing that, like, he's... Like when he tried to do the Terminator dive, and he got tripped up a couple different times. Like I am out of that spot. I thought, oh, okay, so he's gonna continue to set this thing up and just not do it. And then the one time he's able to do it, it's gonna be a big deal. Like stuff like that is what I sense coming out of this.
He was definitely the babyface in this match, and Andrade and Roosh were heels. Dragon Lee was the babyface, but you know, I also thought the whole presentation, like, the match setup, like, they should have the fans just salivating at the, just can't wait for Omega get that hot tag to get in there, like, but no, he's selling, and I know, I guess that's the story they're telling, but like, he's selling, and when he got a hot tag, which they still wrestled like, I think 6 or 7 minutes after, when he got the hot tag, it wasn't that big of a deal when they got the hot tag to him, because they already saw him wrestle already in the match already, you know? Like, they could have done something, the heels kind of jump the baby faces, and they work on the Young Bucks, and the Young Bucks tag the Omega, and it was I wasn't that impressed with the match layout. Andrade's hurt, either has a torn bicep or a shoulder injury or something, because he kept holding his left arm to his side the whole match. So he's probably going to be out for a while. And then at the end, like, what should be the closing shot of the big star's return? What would your closing shot be?
Of him celebrating.
Right. Yeah. Them winning, celebrating, arms in the air. Oh my God, he's back. Yay. The closing shot was Rouge and Andrade beat up Dragon Lee.
Yeah. And the problem with that is, now I know we mentioned this last week, everything is canon in AEW.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know Dragon Lee that much, or if you haven't stayed with him for a little while, like, that, the him getting beat up doesn't really mean anything, because we don't love him yet.
Yeah.
To get beat up.
Yeah.
So, but I will. So we mentioned earlier a tope spot. So they had Omega sitting on the guardrail. Dragon Lee does a tope suicida. He flies through the air,
yeah.
Hits Omega with the clothesline. They both tumble over the guardrail.
Into the fans.
And now Omega, he's supposed to be really hurt, and he is really hurt.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of dangerous. If this was WWE, they would have replayed it 75 times. They didn't replay it once, I don't think.
They probably don't want to get sued.
I had to go on Twitter to watch this thing like a few different times from a few different angles, because it was pretty crazy athletic.
Yeah, and Dragon Lee landed on a little girl. There's two kids right there he landed. That could have been dangerous. What if that boot went to her face?
I think they probably got some merch out of that.
Well, shit, I'm not that. Tony Khan's worth a lot of money. I'm not getting just merch and a free ticket for next show. I'll tell you that. Like, rearranging my, you know, why? What was the point to do that spot? Like, I know Dragon Lee, one of those big things, that big, you know, rocket missile, whatever, tope. But can you do it to the rampway side where, the, you know, there are no fans at least, and you can actually catch it on camera, because you barely caught it on camera to begin with. It's just stupid stuff, man.
And that was a show. I thought I was entertained the whole time. You had that great wrestling match in the beginning of this show. You got Omega back. Punk and Moxley is a clear, there's a clear thing happening, but I don't know, throwing that match 2 weeks early kind of makes you think, and maybe it is just to get, you know, the discourse, because I know on Twitter, everyone's fantasy booking what they think is going to happen. In our Facebook group, we got folks fantasy booking what they think is going to happen. So, you know, getting that as much wrestling water cooler talk you can have, like, nobody really has water cooler talk anymore, but, you know, just getting the wrestling fans hyped up for that next show. I think they did a really good job. I just hope that they can deliver on something that is important enough for that match to happen, or for this angle to happen.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see. We'll see. I'm definitely curious about next week and that match and what they happen after that pay-per-view.
All right, so going to toss it over to myself, actually. My interview with...
It's like Tony Schiavone to Tony Schiavone.
I know. He's going from the back to the middle of the ring. All right, so John and I are done here. We'll be back next week. I'm probably going to do a few more of these interviews. I want to bring some people on and just get thoughts on other stuff. And, you know, we're running through Dynamite pretty intensely. So you know, it's a long show when you and I go 90 minutes. So yeah. I like adding something else. So I'll talk to Phil, but talk to John next week, and send it to the interview that I did with Phil Strum. All right, I want to welcome Phil Strum to the Fight Game podcast. You may have heard Phil if you listened to his interview with Dave Meltzer a few weeks ago on his podcast, Under the Ring. Phil, what's going on?
Not too much, Garrett. Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
So explain the podcast, your idea behind the pod. I mean, you get some really good guests, and I do want to sit here and talk about the podcast for a little bit, but just explain how people could find it, the network you're affiliated with, and all that stuff.
Sure, it's done through the USA Today Network, which is my employer, but also it's available wherever you're going to get your podcasts. So Apple, Spotify, Google, Omni, all that kind of good stuff. And really, the idea behind it, I've been wanting to do something for a long time. I had a blog previously with my USA Today Network.
We all did.
It kind of faded out over time, but I did a lot of work on it. So ultimately, Under the Ring kind of came back as a, you know what? What I think I'm good at is interviewing people. And the best part about pro wrestling is that there is no dearth of interesting people to have fun conversations with. So I basically just said, you know, I want this to be short form. It's going to be about 30 minutes or less. It's going to be a conversation with me and somebody in wrestling every week. I've had some good fortune to have some good, have some really, really good guests on so far. It's just getting started. I know the podcast space is crowded, but if you got a half an hour every week, it might be worth your time.
Yeah, I just recently downloaded your feed once you told me that you had the episode with Dave on. And so since I've also heard the episode with Brian Gewirtz, and I know you got some other stuff coming out, and if you want to mention it, you can, to get people excited. But who has been your favorite interview so far?
That's a tough one. The one I just did yesterday that's coming out Monday was actually pretty good with Eddie Kingston. I really enjoyed talking to him. Also, he's from Yonkers, so it was kind of interesting to just get a New Yorker on with me. It just sounds terrible probably for anybody outside of New York, but whatever. I really enjoyed doing the Dave interview. All of them have been so cool and unique. I think the one that was most fun to people outside of wrestling when I told them I did it was Billy Corgan, getting Billy Corgan mm-hmm. from Smashing Pumpkins in the NWA on early on. And I was kind of like, as a kid who grew up in the 90s, I'm like, I'm talking to Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins, and he's sitting on the floor in his house talking into his iPad. So yeah,
we interviewed Eddie Kingston. It's been over a year now, maybe even been longer than that. And unfortunately, yeah, actually it would have been a little bit over a year, because the Knicks were in the playoffs. They're playing the Atlanta Hawks, and I didn't realize it that we had scheduled the interview to happen during the game. And so as we're doing the interview, because I have the game, I would just have games on while I'm doing stuff in the background. So the game was on when we were doing it for me. And I was like, oh, he's a giant Knicks fan. He's going to want to pay attention to the game. So he was professional, of course. I'm sure he had it in the corner of his eye, as I did. But what I did for that interview is I would break in. You know, we'd ask him a question and go on for about 15 minutes, and then I'd give an update on the score just to kind of let him know that I cared about this thing that I know that he deeply cared about as well. So that, but he's a great God. What a guy to talk to. One, not only the best interview or one of the best interviews, but also really, really good podcast guest.
Absolutely. And I could probably talk about just old school wrestling with him. Same, like, and this is an odd comparison, but like the two or three conversations I've ever had with Jim Cornette in my life, mm-hmm. I had the same kind of thought in my head, like, my goodness, I could go down a rabbit hole with this guy about old wrestling for like literally days if I needed to.
Oh, 100%. Like, Jim has his, people who don't like him now who may have liked him in the past because of his podcast today, but, you know, there's very few people in this world who I would rather talk about, you know, pre-current wrestling than Jim Cornette.
Yeah, I remember the one time he was up here. They did he was doing his one-man show at the time. So they did one here in Poughkeepsie. And I actually didn't even go to the whole thing. I caught like the tail end of it after I went to another wrestling show, actually. But afterwards, we were just talking, and I was asking him about, like, you know, when he first got into watching WWF, you know, right, when he was first getting tapes on that and what he thought of it, how it compared to what he was watching in Louisville and stuff like that. And just I love studying old wrestling and just kind of learning from it. Anytime I get to do that and just kind of pick somebody's brain. I mean, Eddie Kingston, yeah, ended up talking about All Japan because that's his thing, right, you know, and just, I don't know All Japan that well from an actual seeing it perspective. I've read about it, but I was asking him for recommendations. All right, what should I watch? So,
all right. So just, I wanted to ask you this, I should have texted you, but Under the Ring, the idea of what's under the ring. Is this an ode to like the guy who's got to hold on to the chair under the ring to give to somebody? Like what is the reason behind the title of the show?
The reason I initially named my blog that was just because some of the initial pitches for what I should do with my blog were kind of tongue in cheek and joke and people not really understanding what pro wrestling was or why it deserved media coverage and this and that. And I just, you know, you should wear a mask in the photo promoting a blog. I'm like, no, this is not where I'm going with this. I'm going with this from the perspective of I have a news background and I would like to cover wrestling. So really Under the Ring was kind of just a, hey, we're going to kind of go underneath the surface. We're going to, you know, go dig a little deeper. Yeah. Maybe I didn't always do that at times, but that was the initial idea for the name of it and just trying to come up with something that was punchy and not necessarily used before.
Being that you have a news background and a journalism background, what do you think about pro wrestling coverage? Now, obviously, Dave's been around forever. Wade Keller's been around forever. You have the newer folks like Sean Ross Sapp. Sean Ross Sapp, I don't know if he would even necessarily call himself a journalist, but I consider Sean Ross Sapp to be like master of new media kind of thing. Like he's been able to sort of figure out how to put their content everywhere that the eyeballs are. But then on the flip side, there's some really bad ones out there. There's, you know, no ethics whatsoever when it comes to this stuff. What is your take on how pro wrestling is covered?
I think what needs to come with pro wrestling news media consumption is an increase in people's media literacy in doing so. Of course, is Dave always 100% right? No one is journalism ever.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, a lot of times, you know, you're going to get information that is stuff that ends up not happening. And by the nature of the way that Dave needs to do his job, he's going to get, you know, some weird tips sometimes, I'm sure. Anybody who's been a reporter gets weird tips sometimes. But I think that people need to separate. The one thing that drives me nuts is when I see people just throwing around the term dirt sheet without even having a concept of what it means. There's copy paste sites out there that are garbage. And then there's like real actual journalism going on too. So it's like, you can't take Meltzer and Keller and Sapp, and I'll give John Pollock. He's outstanding for post wrestling. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, he's really good too. And I'm sure there's probably a few that I'm forgetting, unfortunately. But you know, just learn what the difference is between that stuff. What's actually just a headline that you're clicking on? What's somebody that's actually going to dive into a topic? Who's somebody that's actually going to have people in these companies talking to them? You know, think about that for a second when you're consuming news.
Yeah.
So, and kind of be able to weed out. There's so many bad faith kind of like actors, both on social media and in sort of the wrestling media landscape too. I'm not going to bother giving them air because they don't deserve it. But just always look and consider the source of what you're looking at. Media literacy is something I'm really passionate about in general, and I've spoken to like classes about it before.
Yeah.
So, and I think that a lot of it can go a long way in the way that you consume your wrestling news.
I mean, you made a great point in that when it comes to social media and when it comes to what Twitter can do, and now, you know, with Instagram, lots of different memes, like you can send information out so quickly. And to some fans, all they're looking for is whatever it is to back up whatever point that they have. And so you just get this virality of stuff that is not, probably not on the level, probably not well researched, could be just somebody lying just to fool with Twitter. And so you see a lot of that stuff. And when it comes to what we try and do now, I have a journalistic background, but I'm not a reporter, right? I'm a podcaster essentially. So I'm not even going to put myself in those shoes, but when I do these shows, I do use my experience to ask the right questions, to get the show going in the right direction, to what, because there's, you know, I have news like everybody else, but I'm not going to just blow through news and possibly offend somebody who may have given me that news. So like there's an ethics piece to this that I think is very valuable to those who have it. And you can sort of tell, you can tell the folks who really know what they're doing in their shows, in their podcasts, because it's really outside of Dave, it's not very much a writing or report. It's still a reporting game, but it's not as much a writing game because everything is so much online on Twitter, on Patreon, on YouTube, you know, sort of just like this. So it's fascinating to me, and it continues to change.
It's changed a lot, you know, just as long as I've been consuming it too. And really the main reason I wanted to get Dave on my show, in addition to just being, he's somebody I've looked up to for a very long time and also been an Observer subscriber for a really long time too, is that, and I didn't shut my email off, so let me close that before that goes crazy. Sorry. Starting to get notifications. I wanted someone, you know, people had said like, oh, well, if you don't have somebody on from WWE and immediately ask them all the questions about Vince McMahon, you're terrible.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, the people that I'm having on my show from WWE are not going to be able to answer the question or have really the proper perspective of Vince's impact necessarily. Like if I've got Damian Priest on, what's he going to say about it?
Yeah,
he's got nothing to say.
He also doesn't know anything. Like he's heard the same stories that we've heard, right?
Right. It doesn't do me any good. So what I wanted to do was, okay, Dave's the foremost basically expert on Vince McMahon. He's covered him for 40 years. You know, he covered the steroid trial. He's covered every step of the way that Vince was on. So who better to talk about what's going to happen with Vince and what's going to happen with WWE than Dave Meltzer?
Yeah.
There's nobody.
Yeah, absolutely. One more thing, and I wonder what you think about this, and then we'll move on. This is I didn't even intend for us to really talk about wrestling media, but it's something that is near and dear to both of our hearts. So I thought it was a nice intro, and it became a nice little discussion. So AEW does a few pay-per-views a year, and they're big events. And the way that Tony Khan uses is the wrong word, but when it comes to media, you have the pre-show call where people can call in and ask some questions, and then he's got the scrum at the end of every show. And I was pretty frustrated with one of those scrums. Now, I was there. I don't want any part of this stuff because it's like 2 hours of you just hanging out in the back, and there's people streaming. It's chaos. And I get the people who like it. It's for their content channels, right? I get that piece of it. That's not what I need it for, so I don't do it. But the first question in one of the press conferences, it was at the Las Vegas show, which was, what's going on with MJF? And Tony goes, no comment. I would have literally walked out, because that's the only reason I'm there at that press conference, is to get information. And for him to no comment his wrestling storyline. Now, he didn't have to tell me all the thing, but he should have had a prepared statement that gave the people something. And so what do you think about how he uses these pressers, which essentially to me, and I may be speaking out of turn here, but they're kind of like, just how can I get the media to join in my PR campaign after the show is over?
Yeah, you hope it doesn't become that. I have been in a lot of I was a sports writer for 10 years, so I have been in tons of bad media press conferences in my life. I might have even asked a bad question or two in my day. Who knows? I don't know. I don't really look into it that deeply. But I think that I think in that case, I would love to see that turn more into, okay, if he's going to give a no comment, that the next person is going to pick up the ball.
Exactly. You
know, and really just say, hey, look, Tony, we need at least somewhat of a statement on where things are at. Even, you know, you can give a no comment that's not a John Tortorella. I don't know if you're familiar with hockey, but you can give a no comment that's not a John Tortorella no comment, where he just gives you one word answers for the whole press conference.
Yeah.
So I think those scrums, they are really long, first of all. I mean, I can't even, could not believe how long some of them were. When I was at MLW several weeks ago, we had a post show one with Cort Bauer, and he's like, we're not going to be here for 2 hours.
Yeah. No. I'm a big Cort guy. I know Cort rubs certain people the wrong way, but I love that guy. I think he's really good.
I haven't had really any issues at all. But just, I think that they invite a lot of media, both to the, that media call that they do going into the shows and at the show itself. I think that has pluses and minuses. I think you have some really legitimate media outlets in there. And then you have some that I actually don't even know what they are. And that's not a knock on them. It's just, they're wide open to a lot of different voices, some of which are going to be reporters who are going to be about holding companies accountable, and some of which are going to be, I want to talk to AEW wrestlers, which is also fine. But it just creates such a it's crazy. I've never seen anything like it. I like the accessibility, though.
Yeah.
I think it's something we could see from WWE moving forward, especially considering the Triple H was constantly doing those NXT pre-calls too, and utilizing wrestling media for some of that stuff too, which is also encouraging.
Nice little transition there, because that's the next thing I want to talk to about. But I just want to state, I don't fully blame Tony Khan for this. I also am holding the media accountable for what they are sort of allowing being created there. Because I think Dave, at least this is me talking to Dave, because I didn't watch any of that stuff, but I think he told me that he asked, and then he waited a little bit, and then he asked again, and he got the same answer, so then he stopped asking. I don't know who else may have asked, but that's...
I didn't watch that one particularly either, so I'm just saying how I would have progressed if I was sitting there.
100%, 100%. All right, let's move on. Triple H is, he's been at the helm of creative now for a few weeks. And I asked this to Josh Nason on We're Live Pal the other day. And I think Triple H has this very interesting position in that he can make some creative changes now. He's not going to overhaul the entire thing. The thing works. But also at the same time, he has to make sure that the people who are watching still enjoy watching. Like, you can't change it up so much that your current audience base is frustrated with the show. And so I started to wonder, do you think Triple H could actually grow a TV viewing audience that has been on decline ever since, you know, you and I were much younger people and wrestling was on fire and it was at its hottest? Now, I think they've stabilized the ratings this year, and they may have actually increased them a little bit year over year. And that's kudos to them for being able to do that, because it's very hard to do. But do you think he could even take it to another level and maybe go get some fans who were attracted to AEW, or who may have even stopped watching altogether because they were just frustrated with the product? I don't sense that number is that movable. But when I started to think about it, I was like, he's got to chase that, right? There's this giant sea of fans who used to watch wrestling that don't watch anymore. And I just wondered your thoughts on if he'd be able to get some of those folks back.
I think he's got the opportunity to. I think that the audience is so – the audience that he doesn't have right now is so fragmented. Like, you've got those lapsed fans, you know, the WCW fan, which is something I asked Eric Bischoff about, you know, weeks ago. And I talked about that with some of my friends before, too. I think you've got the people who were big into the NXT Black and Gold who might have faded out when that changed. I think the key to it, though, is – because he's got that infrastructure so well built for him going in, that he just needs to stick to the way that he wants to creatively tell stories and build stars. And if it's compelling enough content and if it's good enough stars, he's going to be able to build it anyway. I think the one advantage that he does have too, in terms of growing that audience, is that WWE is never shy about using outside celebrities to increase the visibility. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, but they don't like, you know, and I feel like Triple H is going to be a little more maybe straightforward about the way he's doing it, maybe. But, you know, you look at the way that Bad Bunny kind of move the meter, and the way that honestly Brock Lesnar was sort of an outside guy at one point.
Yeah.
You know, to when for when he came back off of his UFC run, Logan Paul, I thought the interview that he did with Triple H was pretty fascinating in terms of them talking about ways that some of the things that Logan Paul has learned in digital marketing could help WWE down the road. So I think that as long as the stories are clear and easy to follow and interesting from week to week, I think you've got a shot, because I think the way that he's going to approach wrestling is going to be a wrestling that people are a little more familiar with and a little more comfortable with. It's not going to be so regimented, and it's not going to be so locked into a certain way of doing things. I think he's open to what new ideas of what stars look like and are. And I don't know if it's going to grow any bigger than it is. It's kind of a societal thing too, I think, with wrestling. But I think he's got a chance to get a really nice buzz.
He's got to be pissed off at the timing of the whole scenario, because he had the Undisputed Era just sort of waiting and waiting to come up, and they would never come up. And this would have been the perfect time for them to come up, as now there's no Vince to ixnay. You know, those guys coming up. So it's just the timing because AEW has a lot of the folks that he pushed in NXT right now.
Yeah, but that's wrestling though.
Yeah.
I've known wrestlers who are outstanding who just because of timing didn't catch on in certain companies. Okay, my tryout, if it would have been 4 weeks ago when X, Y, or Z was in charge, I probably would have gotten signed, but I didn't. So, but you know, and it's just the way the ball bounces, and you got to go with who you got. I think what we're seeing right now, especially with WWE, is that the quality depth of the roster was already present, and people were just being used in ways that Triple H is using them differently now.
Can we grade the Triple H run, or is it incomplete? Have you seen changes that you like?
Yeah, I mean, I think from my own personal enjoyment of it, I think that Raw and SmackDown are all of a sudden much more watchable. I really think that they've gone out of their way to make sure that there are multiple very good to great matches on all shows now. And I'll say, when I was making decisions on buying tickets to Raw or SmackDown in the New York area, I was thinking to myself, nothing's going to happen on this show. There's no reason I need to go to a TV taping. Like,
right.
if I'm going to go to a show, it's got to be something bigger than that. But now, you know, you look at them like, you know, Monday Night Raw from the August 15th episode on Monday. And it's like, you know, there were three outstanding matches on that show, all in different hours, probably to keep the audience, you know, steady, or as steady as they could keep it, which was probably the reason why Ziggler in theory closed the show, because they didn't want it at 10 o'clock and they didn't want it at 9 o'clock. So where else are you going to put it? But I thought McIntyre and Owens was solid, and I thought Styles and Lashley was solid. And I think that just the way that they're formatting the show, it's a lot less cluttered. It's, you know, the segments are flowing. It's almost, and I mentioned this to Dave when we had our shows, that, it's a lot more flowing from segment to segment, sort of like the way ECW segments were sometimes under Paul Heyman. And I think that's a good thing. It keeps, you know, you're competing for people's attention spans with those shows.
Yeah.
And if you can hold them for more than one segment, you probably picked up a win.
All right,
I don't think you can grade it though yet.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be
incomplete.
It's such a gradual build. Maybe in a year we could see exactly, okay, where did he get in that year? What was Mania? You know, what was the big moment of Mania? You know, I'm sure he's going to have some pitfalls along the way too.
Absolutely.
Because naturally people are going to get injured. People are going to not exactly perform the way you want them to, but that's wrestling too.
All right. What about NXT? Now, this actual podcast, me and my partner, John LaRocca, the goal of the podcast was, when they were going head to head, and even when they stopped going head to head, was we sort of did a show. Okay, what was good about NXT? What was good about Dynamite? What was not good about NXT? What was not good about Dynamite? And we do both shows. And, you know, a few months ago, NXT just became unwatchable. We were not looking forward to doing that. So we just sort of extended our Dynamite review, and the show is mostly about Dynamite now. But if NXT does get better and Triple H has a little bit more fingerprints on that show, and it doesn't have to go back to the black and gold, but if right. it sort of looks a little bit more like that or a hybrid of what we have, I know there was a big NXT UK influence on it recently, but what do you think about NXT? What are your thoughts about where that show may go in the future?
I had a big problem with it when they made the switch, mostly because I could not really tell what the direction actually was. I could tell that they wanted it to be developmental, but I really didn't see kind of the long-term vision of it. And I think the other complication they had was they were debuting about 35 people at the same time, and that's hard to do in general.
Yeah.
It had improved, I thought, over time. To the point of last night, I thought it was solid. The episode, the Heat Wave show that they did. I thought there were some really good matches on there. And I think that they're going to get to a point where it's going to be kind of what it was at the beginning of Black and Gold, which was, or the, what people would remember as the kind of the golden era of right, Black right, and Gold, right. for lack of a better term.
Where takeovers were the best wrestling yeah. shows in the US.
Because I think they're committed to getting the high level athletes, and you should, because that needs to be a part of your recruiting process, because it's a tried and true thing throughout the history of wrestling that high level athletes do become stars at times. And they're also, I think, going to weave those in maybe with some veterans that they aren't maybe using on Raw or SmackDown, or perhaps, you know, some people from the past that they want to bring in to work with those folks, because the only way you get better in wrestling, as far as I know, is by working with people who are better than you. So I think we could see some fun stuff with, you know, you take a guy like maybe like a Drew Gulak, who they aren't using really right now on SmackDown, but you mix him up in the ring with somebody like Grayson Waller or Cal Bloom, which is, I forgot what his NXT name is, Von Wagner.
Yeah, Von Wagner.
You know, you put Drew Gulak in there with them, and they're going to get better, and Gulak can perform, and he's going to rise the level that they're performing at. So I think you're only going to see stuff grow with them, because I feel like the path to the main roster is going to be a lot easier now. It's not going to be you work in NXT, and then you get a push for 2 weeks on Raw, and then they give up on you.
Yeah, yeah. You had a question for Dave that I'm not sure you even really got to fully ask him, but you were sort of comparing NXT and ROH, and I was kind of wondering where you were getting at with that.
Where I was going with that is just because, you know, really what NXT was born out of going after what ROH was grabbing at that time, which was stuff with the Young Bucks and Hangman and all those guys. And they were really doing some great business in the US, especially in a little bit, you know, crossing over to New Japan and stuff like that too. And NXT was really born out of going after that style, I guess, of performer. So they were really going after the same piece of the pie. And my question to Dave, as I see NXT possibly changing in the next few weeks of kind of maybe more of what Triple H is shooting for, and I see ROH kind of rising up and sort of becoming an AEW satellite company of sort of developmental, but not, I was kind of thinking that NXT and ROH again might be going after the exact same piece of the pie, depending on, you know, if ROH gets it. Obviously, ROH needs a deal. That's the dependent part that you need right. to happen for them to really become a player. But if that happens and NXT moves ahead with Triple H going after some of the same people, I feel like we're right back where we were, but in a very different way. You know,
that's interesting. I'm trying to think of who's on the current ROH roster, or at least has been on their pay-per-views, who Triple H would go after, you think?
Well, I know him, so I'm going to push him, but I think Bill Carr is somebody who would fit very well in NXT or WWE, and he's been in their system before. And his group with the Righteous is something that's worked very well. They were on the pre-show for ROH when they had their last pay-per-view. I could see him being somebody. I don't believe that Willow Nightingale is under a contract to anybody right now.
That's a good one.
I could see her being somebody who could I would sign her if I were WWE. I mean, I don't know. That's the problem, too. I don't know what anybody's real contractual situation is right now with the ROH stuff, because I feel like as soon as we find out that somebody is with ROH, they just kind of tell us, like, oh, the Briscoes are here. Oh, by the way, Blake Christian, we've got him, too. Like,
I know.
So it's hard to say, but I think that a lot of the people at the end of ROH and kind of that sort of level of independent wrestler, they're up for grabs right
now. Yeah. 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 And who knows who Tony actually has on deals, actual salaries versus the, you know, some of the weekly deals. Cause I would imagine,
right,
you know, the guys who are not under salary are what, like you said, up for grabs if WWE does want to attempt to sign them. So, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to end it and give you another opportunity to kind of talk about your upcoming show with Kingston and all that stuff, and we'll get out of here.
Yeah, so it you know, it's Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. It drops every Monday about 5 a.m. or so, where you get podcasts. It's we try to have somebody interesting for people to listen to each week. I think we've done a pretty good job so far in delivering that. We've got Eddie Kingston coming up on Monday. Some other possible ones coming up that I can't say yet. Larry Dallas, who I believe we might both know, is going to be on in the coming weeks. I was joking with him on Twitter, was that I had him as kind of an evergreen for, you know, popping in for when I didn't have an episode one week. And I was like, you've become the Veer Mahan of my podcast. You know, we're just waiting and waiting and waiting for the Larry Dallas edition. But now Larry's got some good perspective, and I really hadn't talked to anybody about AAA Lucha Libre yet. So that was good to get with him too.
Yeah, I like Larry a lot. He gets some heat on. He's a heat machine sometimes, but
he creates it for himself sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. I will give a recommendation to go and download the last episode with Brian Gewirtz, whose book just came out. I thought that was very cool. He was really thoughtful in some of his answers that he gave you. And, you know, he's this is what he's doing now. He's going on shows and he's promoting the book. But you're not, you know, I'm sure he's doing multiple podcasts, and yet he still was giving you like really, really thoughtful answers. So I really like that.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to that one, and I thought it came out really well. I think what I can probably bring to the table with my show is I'm really just trying to craft an interesting conversation with the person. The best interviews I've heard are largely just really good improv, and the best part of interviewing somebody is being able to listen to the answer and also adjust your question. Not just, I do walk in with a ton of notes because I over prepare for everything.
Oh yeah.
And I sometimes have prepared questions too, but it's really just like, you know, if I can get to a point with somebody where I'm just having a conversation with them, it's probably the best, and it's probably the best for the listener too.
Yeah, 100%. All right, thanks to Phil Strum for joining us here. So thanks to Phil. Thanks to everybody listening. I'm Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.